my friends. I am Vivian McPeak, and this is Hemp Present. If you have feedback or would like to suggest a guest or topic for Hemp Present, email me at hemppresent@gmail.com. My guest today is Kim Richards. Kim possesses over 30 years of experience and a distinguished history of accomplishments in the music, film, and television industries. As CEO and chairman at Allied Artists International Incorporated, he has earned more than 70 gold, platinum, and diamond records, as well as numerous Grammy and Emmy nominations. Chief among his credits is Pink Floyd's The Wall, which has been certified diamond at 23 million copies, making it the third highest grossing album of all time, behind only the Eagles' Greatest Hits and Michael Jackson's Thriller. Richards' video productions have won at both the New York and Cannes film festivals. He's a great guy. I'm proud to have him with me today. Welcome, Kim, to Cannabis Radio.
Thank you. It's great speaking to you again. Vivian, you're one of the good guys.
I appreciate that, man. I appreciate that. Gosh, Kim, you know, you began your career in the music industry during your early teens when the sound engineers at the Greek Theater in Los Angeles were so impressed with your skills, they arranged for a union waiver, permitting you to become the youngest sound engineer to work at the Greek. You later became one of the industry's youngest Y1 union sound mixers ever admitted to the International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees, or IATSE, Local 695. In the 70s, you worked in productions and A&R at CBS Records, then for ABC Television in Hollywood, and then you almost immediately moved to Vice President of Productions at Allied Artists, being promoted to Chairman and CEO of Allied by the 1980s. I mean, that is a stunning trajectory, Kim. From where did you get your industry instincts and acumen? I mean, you must have had a tremendous aptitude for the music industry and media in general.
Well, I grew up in a home just above the Greek Theater. And as a little fellow, probably 5 or 6 years old, I used to sit on this old white wall and listen to the music emanating from the Greek Theater. And if you're familiar with the Greek Theater, when it just got the best natural acoustics of pretty much any theater that I believe in the world. And when the music comes out of the Greek Theater and you're a distance, there's this reverberation. It just sounds incredible. And you had the sounds of Edith Piaf, I'm going back in many years there, Edith Piaf, Judy Garland, and so on. And there was an effect like the Pied Piper. When I got to be 13 years old, I just went down that hill. It was quite literally hiking down a hill to get to the Greek Theater. And I asked them, I said, can I get a job here? And they looked at me as a 13-year-old kid, probably no higher than their waist. And they said, well, no, you can't work here at that age. And then another principal, he could be an usher. And I said, do I get in if I'm an usher? I said, yes. So then I want to do it. The pay in those days were these little script things that gave you tickets to be able to get into the Greek Theater. Well, I was seeing the show anyway. So I gave my tickets away. But the minute I got in, I started hanging out with the sound guys. And it wasn't long before the sound guys went to the folks in the usher department and asked them to keep me on as an usher so I could get in and out. But they wanted to put me in sound, and they let me do it. And the key to this story is I had one fellow that I worked with, and he was a sound man. So he let me mix for opening acts and things like that. And he was standing there with me most of the time, but he would let me mix. And he knew I loved what I was doing. Well, anyway, one day he was out sick, and the union sent another fellow in. And this fellow was very upset that I was there, and he beefed me because I wasn't in the union. And so the union came over and told them they had to get rid of me. I couldn't be working there because I wasn't a union member. And the theory was I was taking the job of a union guy, which I wasn't. Well, anyhow, those union guys, and I'll never forget them, they went, they took up a petition, and they told the union that if they forced them to get rid of me, they would vote to non-unionize the whole Greek theater. And that's how I got the waiver, and that's how I was admitted to the union.
Wow.
And I owe those guys.
You know, I grew up at the corner of Wilshire and Vermont, you know, right off of that. So I'm very familiar with the Greek theater. I have a bunch of industry related questions for you, Kim. But first, you've worked with some of the biggest artists in your long tenure. Can you just share some of them with us, and what interactions have been the most memorable for you? Who's been the most pleasurable and notable to work with?
David Gilmour, without a doubt. David Gilmour is, first of all, he's one of the most talented guitarists that I've ever seen. One of my current artists, Rocky Kramer. You know him, and he is an incredible guitarist. And when I first met Rocky, I asked him what his influences were, and he said Pink Floyd and Queen. I immediately assumed he was reading my bio. But he wasn't. Those are actually his influences. And when you listen to him play guitar, you realize exactly how influential they were. But anyway, David Gilmour is, without a doubt, one of the best guys I've ever met, that I've ever dealt with, and I think he's just an incredible guy. But there's been so many. I worked with a fellow, I don't know that many of your listeners will know who this is, but his name is Norman Winter. Norman was the publicist for, you name it, Frank Sinatra, Michael Jackson, basically everybody. You name the artist, he represented AC/DC. And Norman was a great friend of mine. And just an incredible, he had such an incredible impact on my life. And he wasn't an artist, but he's one of the best people I've ever met.
You've been in the music industry for probably its most transformational period, as it's evolved dramatically with streaming and digital platforms. What are your thoughts on that transformation, and how has allied artists adapted to these changes?
Well, we've been trying to follow the trends, of course, and sometimes you feel like we're chasing them. I was instrumental in dealing with the advent of CDs. The industry was very reticent to walk into CDs back in the 80s, and I was part of an RIAA committee that met at Capitol Records, and the whole purpose of this committee was to determine whether the industry was going to accept CDs as a standard. And I argued that that we were against, the industry was against cassettes when they came out. And if everybody remembers, for all those old timers out there, you remember that 8-track. And the 8-track that you couldn't rewind. You had to just keep going.
I had one.
Around and around.
I had one in my first car.
There you go. Well, I held up an 8-track, and I held up a cassette, and I said, does everybody remember this? And I said, if you do, you're old. But this cassette replaced the 8-track. And what happened, it wasn't a negative to the industry. What happened is everyone who had an 8-track of an album went out and bought a new one on cassette. I said, so it was the sales boon. It was not the disaster that we thought it was going to be. And I believe that the CD will do exactly the same thing for the industry. Now, there is a difference, a major difference between the current streaming technology and digital technology and the old days of records, CDs, and so on, because the mentality has changed. People no longer believe that music is a commodity that has a value. To them, it's free. So the industry has changed to the point where you're no longer marketing the product. You're marketing the artist. And that's why concert fees have gone so high, because the labels have to enter into what's called a 360 deal and get a piece of the cake on everything, because they can't make it off. They can't really make it off of what Spotify pays. Trust me.
And merch has become such an important component, right?
Absolutely. Probably one of the best bands that are merchandising themselves today is Metallica. When you go to a Metallica concert, they have live cameras, of course, on big screens behind them. And they have absolutely great shots of each of the artists as they're going about performing. Well, you can go up front, you tell them you want a copy of the show that you're just about to see. At the end of the show, you go pick up a flash drive, and you've got the entire show edited, a live edit that occurred, and you paid for that live edit, and you can keep the show you saw forever. I mean, that is the epitome of marketing.
Wow. So you're buying the product that's being created while you're there.
That's right.
Kim,
that's exactly right.
Every successful artist, and even, you know, some are on their way, has to at some point make a decision to go with an independent or a major label. What do you think distinguishes allied artists from the major labels, and what advantages does that give your artists?
Well, first of all, Allied Artists goes back 100 years. We started as actually prior to Monogram. The ironic thing about Allied Artists is that Monogram Pictures emerged from an independent film distributor, and they distributed under their names, and then they decided to become Monogram Pictures, and that was over 100 years ago. And so as Monogram, they were the king of the bees. That's what they consider themselves. Quite honestly, it was probably king of the seas, but they marketed themselves as king of the bees. And they distributed to theaters themselves, which was quite a feat back then, because they literally had a Rolodex and had to call long distance to one theater at a time to pick up screens. Well, nowadays you call, you make three phone calls and you've got 2,000 screens, because you've got AMC and Cineplex and all of those that are out there. Well, anyway, Allied Artists, in the 40s, they got together. The original, like David Mirisch and so on, they all got together and they said, you know what we need is we need an A studio. And one of them turned and said, well, you know what? Let's not be an A studio. Let's be a double A studio. And said, well, what should we call it? And we said, well, you know what? We're artists. And they said, and we're allied together. And said, well, wait, AA, Allied Artists. That's perfect. Huh. And that's how the company came about. So, but at that time, Allied Artists was a division of Monogram Pictures. Well, what didn't take long before Allied Artists eclipsed Monogram, and it switched places. Allied became the parent company. Monogram became an imprint. And the record division emerged from that relationship.
Fascinating. Kim, artist development's a critical aspect of any label's success. What qualities do you look for when you're signing or developing an artist at Allied?
Well, I generally look for an artist that I think has longevity, but a true love for the music, because you've got you've got some people out there that are wrapped up in the idea of being a rock star, or, you know, the fame and fortune. When you find somebody who really loves the music and is excited with performing it, they're excited with writing music, then I think that's the most important aspect. Of course, you got to have a good personality in there too.
With artists now able to release music directly on platforms like Spotify or Bandcamp, what do you think the advantages of signing with a label?
Labels still have influence. They've got public relations, PR resources that individuals don't have on their own, and Spotify is not really going to give you the exposure. At Spotify, you do well if everyone knows who you are and they decide to go and listen. Very few people are cruising through Spotify looking for a new artist. And they're not so it's still a great idea to have a label. Now, does it make a difference whether it's a major, a mini major, or an independent? Personally, I think not, because you're talking about a public relations campaign, that marketing campaign for the product, more than you are a sales machine.
Right. What was the most exciting period for you, or is this it, in your capacity as far as the music industry as an art form?
Well, quite honestly, nothing can top my Pink Floyd and Queen days.
Right. So,
I mean, you can't. There's just the excitement and the whole era is just magical to this day, and I love. It's not to downplay some of our current artists. We have some great artists out today, but there's something magical about that era. Just the sound and the authenticity of the artists were incredible. You listen to Freddie Mercury, and Freddie Mercury had a great vocal. There's no question, but was his vocal perfect? Not really. He listened to it. He had some vocal issues at times, and he admitted it. He knew it. But he had this authenticity, and he had this style that nobody to this day can match. By the same token, you go to Pink Floyd, and what they were singing about and the emotion that was there, it's just unmatched. And when you saw a Pink Floyd concert, you knew you were seeing something special. The Wall was an absolute incredible presentation. And although Roger's become a bit controversial of late, when he does his tours these days of the Wall, it still is. He's using technology to the max, and it's still incredible. But what are people rushing to see? Something from the 80s. I mean, that's what they're interested in.
Yeah. I think we're close in age, and I feel so fortunate that I was, you know, there for all of that kind of magical, that whole magical period of, you know, I don't know, maybe 20, 25 years. Not that there's not great music coming. There's always been great music. But yeah, I'm just so lucky that I was there when I consider the golden age, before things got just insanely commercialized. And now we're looking at, you know, everything's digitized and pitch, you know, and pitch benders and all kinds of stuff, auto tune or what have you. Some people put the auto tune. I mean, it's like a sound. It's a cool thing now to have the auto tune so thick that you sound like a robot, you know.
Yeah, it I'm somewhat annoyed by it, to be honest with you. I like the true music, and I'm sure, you know, it has its place, but I like to hear the talent. And yeah, you and I have some of the same haunts from the 80s. You know, the Sunset Strip, you know, Gazzari's and
Rainbow, Roxy,
oh yeah,
Country Club.
Say, you know what? I say the Country Club these days, and you're probably one of the few people that remembers the Country Club.
Right, right.
I did some work with Wolf and Rissmiller, and they ran the Country Club, and it was a fantastic time.
Yeah, that's my big hair days. I was playing in bands, you know, and hanging out there, and I wasn't in the center of the Cyclone like you were, but I was in the Cyclone, right?
You were part of the Cyclone. What are you talking about?
Yes,
you were
yes.
the Cyclone.
Yes. You mentioned we met several years ago when you brought Norwegian American singer songwriter Rocky Kramer in 2017, the 27th annual Seattle Hemp Fest, of which I was the executive director. You know, Kim, I have to say, I just found you to be so very down to earth and real. Music industry execs are somewhat stereotyped as being cold and personal and shrewd. How have you managed to stay so accessible and genuine, man, in all of that?
Well, you know, when I started, the way I got, I was working at the Greek Theater, and this band was opening up, and I believe they were opening up for Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. And I liked the band. They didn't have an engineer, so I was mixing for them. Well, after the show, in those days, bands would play an entire week. We were dark on Mondays, and they would start play Tuesday through Sunday. And so it was Sunday evening, the last show. I was putting up some microphones, and one of the band members came to me and said, and with amazement, kind of, man, he's looking at that time I was probably 15 or 16. He was looking at me with a strange look, and he said, "They said you mixed for us." And I said, "Yes." And I think he was surprised at my age. And he said, "Well, what are you doing? What are you doing during the school year?" And I said, "Go to school." And he said, "Well, would you like to work weekends mixing for us?" I said, "Probably. Where are you going to be?" And he said, "Well, there's a club in Glendale called the Sopwith Camel. You may remember that, but almost everyone, no one else will." And I said, "Sure." So I started mixing for this band, and I was there for a few months. And they came to me and said, "Hey, we've got a major release going out, and it looks like it's going to do well. So we're not going to be doing the Sopwith Camel gig anymore." And I said, "Okay." And they said, "But would you like to, there's a tour going through Australia. Would you like to work on it?" And I said, "Yes." They said, "We haven't told you who it is." And I said, "Doesn't matter. I want to go to Australia." And so they laughed and said, "Okay." Well, it turned out, it was, you know, Saturday night, the Saturday night bunch, boys. But anyway, so I went, did that. And I'm on that tour. I met Andy Gibb, and Andy and I became good friends. And, I got hired to be his assistant at, RSO because of that friendship. And so I started in the industry through artists, and the artists are what makes the industry happen in the first place. And so unless you're sensitive to the artist, how can you possibly run a music company?
Right. Right. And there was a band called Sopwith Camel in the 60s, San Francisco area. That was pretty cool. Kim, are there any projects or artists that you're currently working with that you're really excited about we should be watching for? I mean, I know that Rocky's one of them.
Yeah, Rocky's definitely one of them. And we got a new album coming out with Rocky. We're working on now. It's going to be called Alone in the Rain, and it's a spectacular album. It's another concept album, similar to Pink Floyd in a sense. All his first album, Firestorm, was a concept album. It spawned the number one hit single, Rockstar. And it actually hit number one on the digital DRT, the global DRT. And so it was a great album. And now he's been signed to star in a movie called Rockin' in Time. And Rockin' in Time, he plays a 19, you'll love this. He plays a 1980s rocker who gets caught in a time machine and ends up in the late 2020s. Huh. And yeah. And the, so it plays on the differences between the two eras. And at the same time, the key things that are not different, it still all evolves around the music. Music may be a free commodity to in the minds of some these days, but still, it has to be good. If it's not good music, nobody cares about it.
We've got about 4 or 5 minutes left. If you could blow up the traditional record label model and rebuild it from scratch, would you do anything differently?
Oh, boy.
I know.
I'm sure there's a lot of things I would do differently.
Not very fair.
I actually signed Coolio, and so I think he was a great guy. I'm not a big, not a huge fan of rap, but rap has its place. And there are, and I thought his rap, you know, Gangster's Paradise and so on, was very unique. It was like a little bit of both. And I thought he did something that was above and beyond. And then we put him together with Kenny Rogers, and he did a remake of The Gambler. Think about that.
Right.
So I thought that was unique. But when you get some of this, the rap out there that some of it's great, but some of it loses the concept of melody, and it's just not, I would probably do that a little bit different. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, music is cyclical. It's always going to come back around. And if you listen to what's popular right now, they're actually starting to pick up on a lot of the trends from the 80s.
Interesting. Yes. And nostalgia is a big part of art, right?
Oh, absolutely. Even if you don't realize you're doing it. Right. A lot of the artists out there now, they don't necessarily know why they're playing things the way they are and the styles. It just sounded good to them. Well, lo and behold, they've been hearing it, you know, for most of their lives.
Right. I mean, there's only so many kinds of fashion. There's only so many kinds of each art medium. And we're all subconsciously influenced, right?
Absolutely. And
eventually there's a generation that doesn't remember something.
That's right. I mean, look at the hairstyles out there right now. The long hair is the long hair. The hair bands are coming back.
Yep. Kim, we're down to about 2.5 minutes. So, in about a minute or and a half, what final thoughts would you like to leave us with?
Well, I just love what you're doing, and the fact that you're bringing attention to music in general, to the industry in general. And I think that's we need more of that. And I it's fun to commiserate, but we got to move forward as well. And I think that moving forward with the past in mind is quite helpful. So these new artists that I see today, if they are at least aware of the past and they understand how things worked, sometimes the simplest answer helps with the hardest problem. And artists today that can look at the how we did it in the 80s find simple ways to resolve complex problems.
Kim Richards, Allied Artists International, man. Thank you so much for being on the show, my friend. It's always great to talk to you, man.
And as you as well. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. The Hemp Present intro music is 7 Mile Beach by Joanne Rand, and the outro music is Take Back the Plant by Stickerbush. We'll see you next time, folks. Stay strong. Marijuana.
How much money do you lose every time you miss a customer call? With the Buzz CRM, you never have to worry about that again. Their system automatically texts missed calls and engages leads instantly using conversational AI. It turns your missed opportunities into booked appointments automatically. It's a complete game changer for local businesses. Secure your access today for a massive discount at thebuzzcrm.com. That's thebuzzcrm.com.